Good morning and welcome to another edition of Tree Huggers International on 107.7 The End. My name is Tommy Howe, and this morning is the second installment of our two-part on-location series from Stehekin, one of Washington State's most remote and scenically beautiful locales. Located on the northwestern uplake tip of Lake Chelan in central Washington, and at the southern tip of the North Cascades National Park Complex in the Lake Chelan National Recreation Area. Stehekin is located in some of the most rugged country in the Evergreen State, deep in the heart of the Cascade Mountains, about 25 miles southeast of Glacier Peak, one of Washington State's most remote, unspoiled areas. Lake Chelan provides a unique opportunity to travel directly from the orchard and vineyard country of the drier, high desert-like climate of Chelan and Manson directly into the middle of the Cascade Range. From Stehekin, access to the high country is available via a number of trails, including the route to Cascade Pass in North Cascades National Park, and the backpacking journey from the Suwannee River Road from the west side of the Cascade Mountains across Miner's Ridge and the Glacier Peak Wilderness reaches its end just south of Stehekin along the Lake Chelan Lakeshore. Stehekin is only accessible by boat, by float plane, or on foot. No roads approach Stehekin, although there are roads in Stehekin and there are cars in Stehekin, but all the cars and most of the town's supplies arrives on barge from Chelan. Last week, we caught up with lifelong resident of the Stehekin Valley, Cliff Courtney, proprietor of the Stehekin Valley Ranch and the newly remodeled and reopened Stehekin Landing Resort. And this morning, we'll catch up with some of the other people we met along the way in Stehekin, and we pick up with our conversation with Ranger Carrie Olson at the National Park Service's Golden West Visitor Center up the hill from Stehekin Landing. I asked Carrie how she came to work for the National Park Service and how she came to live in Stehekin.
It's my second career. I originally moved to Seattle to work in advertising. Decided that was not the career choice that I should have made. So I went back to school and got my biology degree and decided that my passion was in environmental education. And so I moved back to Seattle and started doing some ranger work. I was a beach ranger out in Edmonds and then worked on the peninsula for a year. And then started applying for the National Park Service, and I got lucky enough to find myself here. And it's been so fabulous here that I've never left. I started as a seasonal and would come here in the summers and then go to graduate school in the winters. And after a few years of that, then the supervisor position opened up here, and I applied for it and got it, and so now I'm a full-time resident in Stehekin. So this is my third year as a full-time resident.
How do you like it?
I love it. Yeah, I mean, it's one of the most beautiful places I've ever been, and the community, the type of people that a place like this attracts, makes a really great community. And so I have a lot of people who I consider family here. And it's not just like another small town because of where we are. It brings people a lot closer. You know, we don't have television, so we have dinners together, and we have a lot more conversation than I think people have in a lot of other places. Because, you know, each other is our entertainment.
Tell me about some of the flood damage here. I see there's some flood damage mentioned on some of these campsites.
We had the largest flood ever recorded on the Stehekin River in November of 2003. It was what they considered a 500-year flood, but those figures are becoming more and more obsolete. We've had 200-year floods in the same 10-year period, so two 100s and a 500-year flood in 10 years. But 2003 was the largest ever recorded, and it caused significant damage along the road that was built along the river. The normal CFS, which is the cubic feet per second of the river, is down around 1,000, 2,000. Right now, with spring flood, it's up around 8,000 and 9,000, and during the flood of 2003, it was at somewhere between 25,000 and 30,000. So if you can imagine the volume of water flowing through that riverbed, it was incredible. And it caused landslides and washouts, and it changed the river on a geologic scale. One of my favorite quotes is, geologic time includes now, and this is a really great example of that. That it just, the river carved new paths and new channels, and it took a lot of land with it. And that caused a lot of trouble for all of the human-made structures that were in the way, but ultimately a national park is here to not only protect the trees and the flowers and the birds, but to protect the dynamic processes that happen in a wild and dynamic place. So we've been dealing a lot with trying to find a balance between those things ever since. The road is still washed out about 13 miles from here. Above a place we call Carwash Falls, we have not been able to repair the road. And a lot of that's because of the wilderness area designations, and it's something that's still out there and being discussed. But as of right now, the road ends about 13 miles from here. It used to go up about 20 miles, but because of flood damage, it ends now. A few of the camps were along the river. They were great fishing camps, but they were basically washed away in the flood. The picnic tables, the fire rings, they were all washed away. Some of them we have chosen to repair, and some of them were just too far gone, and they're on a part of the road that doesn't exist anymore also. And so there's no safe place to get to them, even if we did repair them. So we haven't, like Dolly Varden, we haven't been able to repair.
How do you get volunteers here to help out with you guys?
We don't have... Like, for helping along the road, we haven't had volunteers because you need to have specialized training and need to be certified to run certain equipment. We do hire volunteers to work here in the visitor center. I have 3 volunteers on my staff. Most of the time they come to me. We hardly have to advertise. It's a great way to get experience if you want a paid job eventually in the Park Service, but some people just want so badly to live in a wild place and live in a place like this that... We pay for their housing as a volunteer, but then they work for free. It just depends on the person and where they are in their life, whether that's something that works for them. But I've come to rely on my volunteers a great deal. They're an enormous help here.
Do you guys do any outreach things with kids?
We do. Here in Stehekin, we have several school groups that come in throughout the year, some in the beginning in the spring and some later in the fall. It's a little bit harder in Stehekin because of the expense of getting up here on the ferry, that a lot of school systems don't have the money to send their kids up here. But the other side of the park, they do a lot of outreach. They have a program called Mountain School, and the school groups come in all spring and all fall and get to live in the outdoors for several days. The Mountain School is run in conjunction with an organization called North Cascades Institute, and they have the Environmental Learning Center up at Lake Diablo, and they do a significant amount of outreach for school kids in that area, but also throughout the Puget Sound.
One of the big focuses of our program is the idea of stewardship, mm-hmm. which has kind of gone out the window, because you have a lot of graying hikers and folks who are instrumental in getting a lot of these places set aside as wilderness, mm-hmm. and now we've got a generation of kids who are just used to having these places available. A day outdoors for them is, you know, going boarding.
Sure.
And this is just a subjective question, but what's a way we can bring kids back into this idea of stewardship, that these are special places that are passed on from generation to generation, and everyone's got to step up and make sure that these are kept as they are for the next folks, for the next 20 years? Big question, I understand.
It's a really challenging question, and it's a question that we've been trying to answer for some time. There's never been as much, you know, organized environmental education as there has been in the last, you know, 10 or 20 years. But yet we have these generations of kids that are coming up and not interested in the stewardship that we've been trying to teach them. And so where is that disconnect? There's a number of people who have been writing books and trying to figure it out, and studies that are going on to try to figure it out. And so we don't know if it's that electronics have... Kids are so focused on their electronics and their toys and their games, and they're not putting their focus outside. A lot of people think it's just a change in our society. We've become so fear-driven that wilderness is scary, all of those animals. And not just that, but if I let my child have this free play outside, then something bad is going to happen to them. And so that freedom that so many of us were able to feel as a child of just playing outside and discovering the frogs and discovering the trees and having this unstructured playtime in a wilderness place, or even just, you know, a little space in your backyard that when you're 5, it is wilderness as far as you're concerned. A lot of those experiences don't exist anymore, and some people think that is a big reason why there's been a disconnect between people, youth, and their environment. It's not an easy question.
Well, Carrie Olson, thank you for trying to answer that. I appreciate that.
You're welcome.
Big question. You must love this job.
Yes, I I'm basically the luckiest person ever. My brothers tease me that I found the job that resembles not working the most. And that's not true. We work, but I get to live in a beautiful place, and I get to help people plan their vacations, and I get to teach people about something that I'm passionate about, and I don't think it gets any better than that.
Just across the way from the Golden West Visitor Center is an outdoor gear shop, and believe me, if you come to Stehekin without even a pair of hiking boots and a good jacket, you may be missing a few items. And among the fishing rods and the latest in lightweight backpacking gear, I found Jeff Gregory. Like many of the folks in Stehekin, Jeff Gregory is a seasonal employee, and like Carrie Olson, he isn't originally from Washington State either, but his path brought him here all the same. I asked Jeff how he found out about work in Stehekin.
A website called coolworks.com. You can pretty much pick a state that you want to go to and find a remote job.
Where are you from originally?
Texas. My brother, he works in the restaurant down here as the breakfast and lunch cook.
Where in Texas are you from?
Houston originally.
Is that
right?
We
live in Uvalde now.
And you came all the way up to the great Northwest.
Yeah. I actually left Hickory, North Carolina to come here the first year I came.
And that's in the Smokies, correct?
Well, no, that's just outside, right at the foothills, I guess. It's about an hour northwest of Charlotte.
How do you like it?
I love it. It's my third year.
So where do you live during the off-season?
I'm going to try to find something to do up here this winter and stay. My brother ended up staying last winter when he came up here. The last year was his first year. Because I've been just traveling to, you know, other remote locations, you know, Everglades, Smoky Mountains, you know, in Tennessee and stuff like that in the wintertime and winter in there. But if I can find something to do, I'm going to stay up here for the winter. I want to see all the snow.
How did your brother do last winter?
He did actually great. He did... He rented a cabin from some people, and it was an old cabin, so he had an outhouse to go to the bathroom. And he was telling me one day, it was about 5 foot of snow on the ground, and it was the middle of the night, you know, and he was just going to quick run to the outhouse, go to the bathroom, and come back. And when he ran to the outhouse, the door shut and it locked. So he's standing out in his underwear and a t-shirt in 5 foot of snow.
Oh!
And you can't just go somewhere in your underwear and t-shirt and Stehekin and wake somebody up. You got a key, you know.
So how did he get back inside?
I think he finally found an open window and crawled in. Yeah.
If you can't get in, well, then you break in.
Yeah, last year I got up here and, you know, nobody locks anything here. Everybody leaves their keys in their car. And I was cooking at the ranch for the first 2 years I was up here. I was on the boat with some friends of mine that live up by the ranch, some of the Courtney family, and they had two cars down here, and they were going to some friends, so they couldn't give me a ride up there right away, but I had all my bags, and it's, you know, 10 miles up there, and Mark tells me, well, just take my red truck, it's the one with the keys in it, and so I went to the first red truck I saw and threw my stuff in the back, and of course the keys were in it, so I took off and went to the ranch. I was there for about a half an hour or so, and Cliff gets up there, my boss, and he says, you know, glad you're here, you know, and everything. Do you have a good trip? And, you know, the preliminaries. He goes, and by the way, you stole a car. Apparently it was the wrong red truck. So I just took it back and got the other truck, you know.
Well, I went to one of the outhouses up there by the campground.
Uh-huh.
And this is the nicest bathroom I've ever been in the woods.
Oh,
but of
yeah.
course, it can be nice because no one's going to vandalize it here.
Exactly.
You know, and you go to any other Forest Service, you know, hole in the ground, and they're trash. That they're by a parking lot. They're paint gunned and
yeah.
Know.
Well, the difference is you can drive to those.
Yeah.
You know, here you got to really want to come up here, and you know, and there's really only one way out: the boat or well, the plane.
Yeah.
But you're going to be standing down here. With your magic marker waiting on the boat, you know, if they see it before the boat gets here,
right, you got
you're
problems.
Gone.
Unless you want to hike out. Which
yeah,
is...
unless you want to hike out.
Jeff Gregory, thank you very much.
While hiking the Imus Trail in the hills up from the Stehekin Landing behind the Golden West Ranger Station, I walked through fire-scarred forest from last year's Flick Fire, named for nearby Flick Creek, which ultimately burned nearly 8,000 acres in fits and starts from June to October of last year, and at one point resulted in a Level 3 evacuation order for about 30 homes and businesses around Stehekin Landing. Walking through the area now, the forest is recovering, there's plenty of green, A wooden bridge across Purple Creek has recently been replaced, and nature is moving on, with fire being recognized today as a necessary natural element in the forest, every bit as important as rain or snow. Big Douglas firs around the creek bear fresh burns, but the trees are designed to handle it with their thick bark. And for many species of trees, fire is required in order to get the temperature high enough to melt away pitch and pine cones, thereby enabling the seeds to take root in the freshly cleared ground. Still, fire is a threat for the residents of Stehekin, and it is a scary experience. Nature is in the raw in Stehekin, from the wild immediacy of the lakes and surrounding mountains to the Stehekin River thundering out of the Cascade High Country through the gorge beneath what is literally called High Bridge. At the border of the Lake Chelan National Recreation Area and North Cascades National Park, and a popular trailhead and entry point for the Pacific Crest Trail, stretching all the way from Manning Provincial Park on the Canadian border all the way down to Mexico. On a drive from the popular Stehekin Pastry Company to the Stehekin Valley Ranch, the Stehekin River was busy changing its course and reclaiming old floodplains in the middle of the spring runoff, as Alton Leatherman, a retired horticulturist and fruit consultant, told us along a bumpy drive through the recently flooded area.
Actually, right next to it. When we had a big flood a few years ago in the fall, this carved out a new channel right here next to the road, so now anytime we get high water, we can have water on the road up here pretty quickly. But what's really kind of sad about the whole deal is that there's some folks that live up here on the left-hand side of the road. I don't think that they knew what they bargained for when they were getting riverfront property a number of years ago when they bought this place. And now they've kind of become islanders, you might say, like this fella here on the left.
Technically, it's an old channel that the river decided to reclaim.
Now, a few days ago, when the water was real high, the water was right up on the cement there, his foundation of his house. This morning, when I came up the valley for the first time, one of the local residents out here, the gal that drives his pickup, had a pair of waders on with a backpack on with plants hanging out the back of it. She was going over there to plant her garden. They've had a real hard time maintaining any sense of driveway through here, as you can see. Like right there. River's kind of made a mess out of the whole deal. They're very concerned about the whole situation, to say the least. They don't think it's probably a long-term situation there. Actually, the river was bent over the road in here as of a few days ago.
After that bumpy, impossibly scenic drive along the river to Cliffs Ranch, we saw a deer and a young black bear quietly coexisting in an old homesteader apple orchard, then made our way to Rainbow Falls, which has to be seen to be believed. Granted, it was the middle of the spring runoff, but the falls were thundering. In my experience in the Pacific Northwest backcountry, in California, Montana, and Colorado, I've seen a lot of waterfalls. But Rainbow Falls, with a drop reaching over 380 feet, is immensely impressive. Almost tucked away in a corner of the valley, among giant Douglas firs and aromatic old-growth ponderosa pines. Of all the places I visited while in Stehekin, I may have enjoyed this place the most. To cap things off, Treehuggers International was treated to a ride aboard one of Chelan Airways' float planes as we soared above the lake in the Stehekin Valley, all the way to the edge of Cascade Pass, with glaciers, waterfalls, and incredible peaks and vistas beneath us everywhere.
the North Cascades National Park Service Complex, and that's unique in the Park Service because it's the only complex site where there are two national recreation areas and then two different sections of national park, and we're all managed by one management team, one set of staff. And so Lake Chelan National Recreation Area is also part of the complex. And so it's kind of a little bit unique, but the recreation areas incorporate communities, one being here in Stehekin and the other one being up along Highway 20 near Ross Lake.
Oh, okay, right. All the communities.
In the Ross Lake National Recreation Area.
Okay, so that's not like New Halem in those towns.
Yeah, it's, exactly.
It is, okay.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Okay, because we've been hiking up like around Diablo Dam and stuff like that.
Yep, and that is also part of the same national park complex.
Okay.
That's also North Cascades. But that's just the upper end of it, the north end, so the north complex of the park, and then Ross Lake National Recreation Area. And then we have the south complex of the national park, and then the Lake Chelan National Recreation Area. But it's all one park site.
And it's unusual for a national park to be bisected by a highway. In this case, Highway 20.
It is. It's not unheard of, certainly, but it's for the amount of wilderness area that this park has, I guess it is a little bit unusual. There are lots of urban parks and lots of parks with highways, but being that we have 93% of our park is wilderness area, federally designated wilderness area, and then we have these corridors for the roads, like the one on Highway 20, and even the Stehekin Road here is, when it goes up into the national park for a short ways now, it's a corridor of non-wilderness within wilderness area.
The wise management and protection of a spectacular natural area of Washington State, hand in hand with the preservation of a community. I hope you've enjoyed our two-part series on Stehekin here at Tree Huggers International. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for making Tree Huggers International a part of your Sunday morning. Once again, many, many thanks to Cliff Courtney and the staff of the Stehekin Landing Resort for their kind hospitality during our stay. For more information about the resort and the Stehekin Valley Ranch, go to stehekin.biz. That's stehekin.biz. You can also go to stehekinoutfitters.com. Additional thanks go to the staff of the Lady of the Lake in Chelan and Chelan Airways. If you have questions or thoughts about the program, please feel free to shoot me a note. Tommy Howe, my email address is though@entercom.com. That's though@entercom.com. The opinions and statements expressed during the course of Tree Huggers International do not necessarily reflect the views of the entire staff of 107.7 The End. But as the producer, I am solely responsible for this program's content. Again, you can email me, Tommy Howe, at though@entercom.com. I've been saying for the last couple of weeks we're going to make the audio files for all of the Tree Huggers International shows available online, and we have. If you go to the Tree Huggers International page at 1077theend.com, you can scroll down beneath the tree hugging photo and find audio files of all of the shows we've done in this series. Just go to 1077theend.com and then go to shows. By the way, if you have a photo of yourself hugging a tree, feel free to email that off to us again at though@entercom.com. We'll talk to you next Sunday morning at 7:30, but in the meantime, sit back, relax, and get ready for Jim Keller and Resurrection Flashback Sunday next on 1077 The End. Have a great week.